Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast for Friday, April the 7th, a long-awaited date, 2017. I'm Bruce Mitchell, Senior Torch columnist. We give a little remembrance to the King of Mean, Don Rickles, and we move on with PW Torch Livecast. And let's go, of course, lots of WrestleMania stuff, talk about lots of post-WrestleMania stuff, including the roster shakeup, whatever the hell you want to call it, 515-605-9345, 515-615-9345. If you want to join the show, joining the show right now is our friend Rich Fan. Rich, welcome to PW Torch Livecast.
Hey, Bruce. Hey, Livecast audience. Hope everyone's doing well.
Sounds a little shaky there. What's going on?
Oh, yeah. I lost my voice from all the fun events. I read your article, and Comic-Con is definitely a good analogy for WrestleMania week. Pardon me, I'm going to walk by a transformer here. And I got to go to a lot of the WWN events and the Raw after Mania, but I skipped NXT and I skipped, well, watching live at least, WrestleMania, because I wanted to my favorite wrestlers from Progress and some of the indie guys I haven't had a chance to see live before. So it was overall a good experience, and I lost my voice yelling delete, delete in the back of a comic shop named a comic shop. They had a speakeasy there where not only was it me and 40 gentlemen I didn't know and three of my best friends, but a couple of the wrestlers who didn't go to WrestleMania, like SoCal Val and some of the Evolve people, went as well. So it was a really cool time hanging out with them in an environment where it wasn't a fanboy or like people losing their minds about their celebrity and just everyone enjoying the matches. So that's where I'm at throat-wise.
So you went the weekend, but you watched at a bar or a comic shop.
It was like a bar set up behind a comic shop. It was called the Geekeasy.
Yeah.
And so it was really good.
Yeah. Okay. And so what was your estimation of the show? What did you think of the show?
I saw that you gave it like a 4.0 and everyone else trended a little higher. For me, WrestleMania, I'd probably put it at a 6, 6.5. And mainly because, like all of you, I was put off by the Triple H self-aggrandizement match and really just the overall length of the show. I know in the past couple of days, a lot of people have argued that the New Japan shows are typically that long, etc. But my counter would be most of the New Japan shows also have mainly title matches and matches that The 50-minute match was Omega Okada. The 50-minute match wasn't Yuji Nagata versus a new wrestler. So it wasn't just the time that was spent. It was how that time was spent. And I think allocating 26 minutes to Triple H and Seth Rollins was a poor use of their time.
What was the best thing you saw in Orlando?
Best thing I saw in Orlando, I would say, is probably the Progress show, or the WWN Progress versus Evolve show. And the reason I say that is the people I saw there, I think I talked about it a little bit, alluded to it. The number of matches some of those guys wrestled was insane. And that led to, you would think, the quality going down. But sadly, they gave, 100%, I don't want to get crazy and say 110 or something like that. But, a guy like Keith Lee, who I'd never seen before, stole the show. The South Pacific Power Trip tag team from New Zealand. I saw them wrestle twice that weekend, and both times It was like a 20-minute epic tag match. But as you mentioned, there was no real stakes because storyline-wise, there was no reason for them to wrestle other than for, you know, they set up a Progress versus Evolve series and whoever got the win got points. It wasn't really an emotional tie. It was just an exhibition. But on the whole, I think I liked the WWN show mainly because, and I think you'd appreciate this, it featured one of the most old school wrestling tropes that got played out over the course of the evening, in which Keith Lee beat up Drew Galloway to the point where he was spitting up blood and vomiting and, you know, couldn't continue in the main event of the WWN show. And at this point, my phone was broken. I find out from a buddy that he's sitting in the front row of NXT.
Wow. Yeah. What was it like? Okay. You were right there. What was the reaction to that? I mean, for the people that were at the show expecting Drew Galloway, and yes, they did. I don't know why you think like beating a guy up so he starts vomiting is old school, but is an old school trope, but beating a guy up so he can't wrestle is, but you know, anyway, what was the reaction to
For me, the old school trope was the, you know, the guy gets beat up and disappears from the one territory and then shows up in another in a completely different character. But the difference is with technology, it plays out over the course of 3 hours.
Right.
So yeah, like at 7 o'clock, I think when the show started, he's getting the crap beat out of him by Keith Lee. And then around 9 o'clock during the semi-main, because he was supposed to be in the main event of that show, in the semi-main, people are tittering in the crowd because they're seeing screenshots of him in NXT as Drew McIntyre, which goes in the face of the entire storyline he had in Evolve, where he was trying to save people from being signed to NXT and wasting their careers away when he was the king of the independents.
So what was the feeling about Evolve at that point? Were they mad at Gabe? Were they mad at Evolve? Were they mad at Galloway? Were they happy for him? Did they just think this was going to be a great show no matter what? Or was this feeling of damn? Or what exactly were fans saying about this?
Fans were more kind of chuckling about it, like, oh, wow, this is crazy that he's in both places in one night. And it was more or less negated because of the fact that they still had Matthew Riddle in the main event. They still had a storyline there with members of his stable Catch Point in the main event. And then they added Timothy Thatcher, who had a storyline going in Evolve that if he didn't win the WWN title, he was going to fire his manager, Stokely Hathaway. So they did enough with the in-story stuff to tie the fans into the main event enough that it wasn't something that was seen as a negative.
We're going to pause for this brief commercial message, and we'll be right back with more of Rich and more and some of your phone calls.
If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com.
All right, Rich, let me ask you this. What was the weirdest thing you saw in Orlando that weekend, wrestling-related, that is?
Okay, well, I was fully into the whole idea. Like, once I read your article and saw it was Comic-Con when you had been talking to Dave Meltzer about it, I completely agreed 100% because I went mainly because Progress Wrestling was there and they're a promotion based in the UK. I would never, especially with my son right now, I would never afford to be able to fly to England and stay there long enough to watch their matches. I can watch on TV. But one of the other things that attracted me once we were there was I stayed up till midnight to go to the Joey Janela spring break. Joey's a CZW wrestler that's an independent guy who for the last 5 years has wanted to wrestle Marty Jannetty. So the semi-main event of Joey Janela spring break was Joey dressed as 1995 Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels versus Marty Jannetty. And he also promised that because they couldn't afford Earl Hebner for an entire match as referee, he would show up for a run-in as ref, which occurred during that match after Marty Jannetty had hit a Canadian destroyer on Janela. So that was by far the weirdest thing I saw the entire time there.
Yeah, I think that fits in. I think that So his dream was to wrestle Marty Jannetty. And yeah. he lived his dream at Spring Break Janela. Radigan's going to be, Sean Radigan did a review of the show, but I didn't look at it. Although I was looking on my Twitter timeline and saw some weird stuff. So I was like, okay, what is this? But yeah, very much, I mean, and you know, as it happened, I had gone to my first Comic-Con in a long, long time, over 20 years. And so I was kind of thinking about how the culture had changed and how it was the same and all that. And I'm part of the comic book culture, but I'm more part of like, go to the comic store, talk about the comics, buy some comics, go home. And that's about it. And so, yeah, I'm just like, boy, that's a lot of wrestling to watch. Boy, that's a lot, you know, like you don't have the promos, you have all that. But when Dave said Comic-Con to me, I was like, I'm starting to get it.
Oh, yeah. Some,
you know, and
that was one of the things I listened to. I'm sorry to interrupt you. One of the things I heard when I was listening to your audio with Wade was when you mentioned that part, and I would disagree with some of the matches I saw, like the Evolve shows and the WWN shows did have storylines that tied into why guys were wrestling. There, for the most part, there were some exhibition type events, but, and that tied me in because
did the fans know that were there for those shows know the storylines, or were they there? Even though the storylines were there, they didn't really know them, but they knew the principles. They knew that, you know, they knew the best workers and all that.
I think it would be completely dependent upon where you sat. That was my biggest observation. If you were in the first, the way Evolve and the way Progress worked, they set it up, and I don't know if it's the same way at CWF, but they fill up the rows, and then as you fill up the rows, then you get another row. Until then, you could either buy a seated row or general admission. I would argue 100% the people you're talking about were in general admission. Because, for instance, at Progress, I bragged to my friends the entire time to get them fired up about the show. Jim Smallman, the proprietor of Progress, they came up with one simple phrase that I think encompasses a lot of what I find wrong with crowds in wrestling. And he's like, you can cheer what you want, you can curse, you can kind of keep it, whatever you're going to do, but don't be a dick. That's his one rule, and everyone that's a Progress fan chants it with him when he says it's the one rule. For the Progress show, everyone in the seated rows said it. No one in general admission did. And it bore itself out during shows because they would try to start some of those chants, like delete, they would start they would try to do any of those chants, and they were instantly shunned and hushed by the people in the regular rows to the point where they didn't continue them the rest of the night.
Yeah, the CWF is running tomorrow night in Gibsonville. But the CWF shows, it's more if the last show was, you know, the last show was their big tag team tournament. So there were some fans, John Filipavage and Papa Hales and some folks and his crew and some folks from out of town sitting in the what's called the VIP seats, which is just basically some chairs with some padding and a bat and a better back and then a steel, just a normal steel chair. But most of the people there, they're not there because it's cool. It's a cool wrestling promotion. They're there because it's wrestling and they're into the stars and they're into that stuff. You get a little bit of this is awesome, but most of the time you just get them reacting to the ebb and flow of the matches and what's going on with the stories, and the stories are booked and they make sense. And so that's different. Now, have I yelled at people before because I thought they were chanting something stupid? Yes, I have, but it's been several months since there were some fans that were just yelling for actually about a year yelling for German suplex, chanting for German suplexes, you know, out of nowhere. And you know, I just remember I was with a teacher friend and I went off, started yelling at somebody and she was just like doing, and I was like, it's nothing personal. It's just like, you know, I couldn't even explain what the deal was, but yeah, it's more organic with them. How were the crowds at the shows that you went? In other words, did they have the number of fans they were looking for, or was it less or more, or harder to get in, or everything was up and down as far as that goes?
Well, because of them all being tied into the WWN, not necessarily family, but they were all sponsored by the WWN. They all were at this one place, the Orlando Orlando something entertainment. And so it was, you know, I affectionately called it Oli. And so all of the shows I went to, with the exception of Raw, were at Oli. And so I could go to one spot. It was essentially a community center slash off-track betting. So it sat about 1,500. And the seats were, you know, most of the fans were good. I am not a big picture person until I get to these events. I'm usually a person where I'll take a picture of the environment. I'm not big on taking pictures myself unless it's with my family. But I take, you know, until my phone broke Saturday, unfortunately. I took numerous, like, selfies. Like, I talked with Jim Smallman Thursday when I got there. And I had a 15-minute conversation with him about how nervous he was that they would get the crowd they wanted, a crowd that was involved, a crowd that wasn't going to be sitting on their hands or trying to be smarter than they needed to be in terms of, you know, it's our show and you're just here, or any of that silliness. And for the most part, I think all of the promotions got it. The unruly nature of Jolie Janelle's Spring Break was reflected in the crowd. Evolve 80 and 81 were both really good fans. 81 had a match that was akin to a death match between Ethan Page and Darby Allin that I wasn't. The older I get, I'm not a big fan of death matches. So to watch someone get thrown from the ring into the third row was not very appealing to me. And so while everyone's chanting for it, it was not, you know, I was not exactly back in the element. I wasn't really in the moment with the match. I was more worried that this kid's going to bleed all over the place for, you know, a very small payday and then get dropped off in an emergency room and told, you know, you were in a car accident or something. And so that was a little disturbing. But in terms of all the shows, in terms of the feel, I think they did really well. Like I said, the Progress show, it's kind of like, and you're a music fan, so a lot of the wrestlers pick very specific themes. And in Progress, depending on the wrestler, the fans will sing along. And again, to my previous point, if you were a fan of Progress before you got there, you sang along after the music stopped to the continuing parts of the lyrics that weren't played. And the people around you were confused. In the case of, you know, someone wants to make the wrestling chant or you effed up or anything like that, they'd be shushed. But there were some fans like Pete Dunne. He won his match, and fans who were aware of Pete Dunne and what was going on with the WWE chanted to him, F off back to Access, which was funny and, you know, accurate considering he was leaving early to go to Access. And because of, I don't know if you knew this, there was some hacking issues that delayed the Progress show. So right after it, he was supposed to go to Access, and apparently WWE sent drivers to pick up the European talent, and they basically had to, like, hop in a van and book it because they were going to be running late.
I knew some of that. Yeah, I knew about that. Yeah.
And so it's a weird dynamic. Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Do you think that all this is sustainable for WrestleMania weekend, for a business model for a lot of companies and for WWE and WrestleMania, that, you know, that this is going to be this Comic-Con, you go as a part of the wrestling culture, however you want to say it, and everybody gathers and this and companies make or break this and with all this wrestling, or is this a fad? I mean, is this the future, or is this here for the, you know, for the foreseeable future, or is this going to be a bubble and pop?
I think it's going to last as long as the WWE allows it to last, which is a sad and scary thought. And the reason I say that is when, you know, I read in the Observer that the WWE paid for all of the visas for the international talent that were on the WWN shows, which then allowed them to use them for Access. That creates a very dependent relationship, more so than I think even a Gabe Sapolsky might be comfortable with, but you have to allow, because otherwise how are you getting these guys in? I would argue, and, you know, I'm taking it one step further, but one of the things I thought about with my prior job working with, like, the consular's desk at the State Department for a little bit, most of the time when wrestlers go international, they say they're on a student visiting, or they're on vacation, and then they find ways to hide the money they make and not announce that they were going there for profit. By putting them in here legally and under the current, like, political regime, it'll be very dangerous, I would argue, for international wrestlers to lie about how they're getting into the country and for what reason, even if it's as benign as quote unquote just pro wrestling. So if you have to depend on the WWE that much to get your talent, and the other places like Wrestle Circus or Ring of Honor are going to be frozen out where you have to be like 20 miles away from the venue and from the epicenter of the fandom, it's going to make the situation where you're dividing the fan loyalty in this convention atmosphere to the point where it isn't going to be sustainable. Like in New Orleans, everything's on the French Quarter or just outside of it. And I'm going to go, but I'll tell you right now, hand on a stack of Bibles, I'm not going anywhere in the deepest Louisiana just to watch three guys do a Canadian destroyer through a table. That's not going to be the way I go out, you know, because I don't know Louisiana. I don't know anyone in the area. At least in Orlando, I had family friends that I knew of in the area that if I got lost, I could call them and get picked up. But with some of these venues, it's going to be you're playing with fire, assuming this is going to be sustainable.
That's really interesting. Very interesting answer. And in some ways, you know, and I want to go back to, you know, talking about how long the show was and people saying that the New Japan shows are that long. And, you know, my reaction to that is I don't feel the pressure to when I watch a whole New Japan show. Sometimes I cherry pick. Sometimes I watch the whole thing, but I watch it in chunks. I might watch an hour and a half, go do something, come back, watch an hour and a half. With WrestleMania, it's all in, and I'm still kind of, you know, and I've, you know, with New Japan too, it follows that the first matches are, you know, they're decent matches, but they're not there to be like the intense part. So they don't go up and down. It's just like, and then it builds to the most important stuff with WWE. You know, they start off with Shane McMahon and AJ Styles, which brings me to this. What was your best match at WrestleMania this year? I think there's been some interesting answers to that, and people are all over the place on that. What was your best? What was the best match you saw at WrestleMania?
The best match I saw would probably be the shortest match. I really enjoyed Brock Lesnar and Goldberg.
Yeah, I did too. I mean, but Wade and I talk about this on the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, which I can proudly say has all been recorded, and honestly, I'm not sure which parts are up yet, but it's all done. And for this weekend, you know, I started thinking about, well, how do you rate that match? And it worked. It was hard hitting. Everything was there. It was exciting. And it had that electricity I was looking for. So it's up there, but still pretty short and still not all that. I don't know. I mean, I kind of had trying to figure out where to go with that. And I was like about 3.5 stars. But to me, that was the match that was the best match that worked exactly the way it should have and was exciting exactly the way it should have. But I'll be interested in callers talking about their bet, what they thought the best WrestleMania match was. And we might as well let's go to some callers, Rich, if you're all right with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I would say real quick is I'm a big fan when it comes to those sorts of matches is I'm a big fan of like Kamaitachi and Dragon Lee and their matches. Most of their matches top out at 7 minutes. And it's because it went from an exhibition match where it was just two luchadors to two guys who hated each other over the course of 2 years. And because of that, they didn't need to build the psychology of move, counter move. They went in from minute one. I want to knock you out. You want to knock me out. We might occasionally flip, but every move is to put you down for 3 count. And I think that's what Goldberg Lesnar was. It wasn't going to be hold, counter hold, Greco-Roman knuckle lock. I'm putting you through a table. I'm F5-ing you. I'm spearing the crap out of you. Let's go. And I've seen a couple of those in New Japan, but it's been very rare for me in WWE to see a 5-minute slugfest that felt like a bar fight. And I think that's what made it appeal to me that much.
Yeah, I like how you said that. That's what appealed to me a lot too. I like the matches that are a lot. I mean, I like the wrestling matches and the game of human chess, and I really do love that. But I also like the fight. You know, and there's something visceral about watching a fight, and this had that. And also, I mean, I think you hit on something too. It's a different style than WWE normally has, and WWE has kind of a blandness and a sameness sometimes because of the kick out of your finisher style. And the you know, the exact same kind of certain not power spots, but you know big spots and all that. And so I think that this just looked like, you know, two bulls and two very good bulls out there. And also I just enjoyed the craft of getting Bill Goldberg through a program where everybody made a lot of money and he stayed over and Brock Lesnar got even more over, and he really didn't even have a match in him. I thought, as a student of pro wrestling, I was fascinated by the fact that they pulled that off in this era. So, but let's go to our
and
first
I have an observe.
Go ahead.
Ooh, I'm sorry. I just have a quick observation that we can get to at some point tonight, but I'd love to get back to it. Seeing Raw live, there's something I want to make a comparison between Roman Reigns and Goldberg in terms of crowd reaction and how authenticity, I think, is what the difference is between the two. But let's do callers and we can get to that later.
Yeah, let's go to that. Let's talk about that. Because I want to talk to you about being at Raw live. But Wade and I, again, I thought the first part of Raw was one of the most extraordinary wrestling moments I think I'd ever seen. And not exactly sure what it all meant, but I know what I think about it in the main. But anyway, let's go to our friend Brian in Phoenix. Long time PW Torch VIP member. Brian, how's your day?
Hey, Bruce. Hey, Rich. Hopefully you both have a real good day and a real good weekend. My day was great, Bruce. A couple points really quick. Rich, when you talk about going to Raw, I'm interested in hearing about the FU chant that happened. Because one of the callers called the live cast and talked to Wade earlier this week and explained about how he was sitting in front of like a family when the FU chants were going on at Roman, and how the mother or parents had to cover up the kids' ears. And so I'm interested to hear about what happened to your section when that happened, when the FU chant happened. But my question for both of you is that Simon Gotch he got his release over the week. So my question to both of you, what is Aiden English's future? Would you, have him go single, maybe find another tag team partner, and then what would you have his first feud on either Raw or SmackDown? And another subsection, part of that, Bruce and Rich, is that the Revival came up on Raw over this week. And with the Vaudevillians, I know, Bruce, you weren't as high on them as a lot of other people were, but they pretty much crashed and burned by the time they hit the main roster. I know they had a brief feud with the New Day, but after that, they were pretty much just jobbers. So, Revival is totally different than the Vaudevillians, but, hopefully they'll do better than that. So, if you talk about Aiden English and then what do you think how the Revival is going to do? Thanks a lot, guys.
No problem, Brian.
Yeah, starting with Aiden English, I would guess that he can sing, and he did it in NXT, and the WWE might be interested in pulling that out of him. Now, how that works as, what sounds like a classically trained voice, and so do they turn that into some sort of wrestling gimmick? Is he the pompous singer? Is he the singer that's really good that people want to beat? I don't know, but I would suspect that if they try that, it'll be something mid-card. Rich, you want to chime in on Aiden English?
Sure. With Aiden, I joked with Travis on Wednesday. He could sell himself as the last Guerrero since he's married to Eddie's daughter and could get the blessing of Vicky and do some crazy stuff. But I think really it's going to be either him as a singer or him getting paired up perhaps down the road with Pete Gallagher.
With Jack Gallagher. Yeah.
Jack Gallagher.
Not as Vaudevillians, but yeah, that's that could be too. I don't have huge hopes for all that, but I don't know who exactly you'd feud him with, but somebody else in the mid card at this point. As far as what's the other wrestler before we get to the chanting?
Yeah, the other wrestler was the top guys, the Revival, and your view of them and their chances on the main roster.
And again, Wade and I talked about the Revival, and I'm a big fan of the Revival. And I never thought I'd say these words ever, but it was about as close as we're ever going to get to Gene and Ole Anderson, just wrestling gimmick heels in WWE in 2017, way closer than I ever thought that we would get. But I thought they did a great job, and it's what WWE is going to have to be dedicated to if the Revival is going to work. Which was come out, kick symbolically kick over the ice cream cart of New Day, then cut off New Day, cut off Xavier Woods in the ring, not let him tag, not let him tag, beat him down. Don't do anything that's cool or about getting fan reaction, much less approval, just heelish type wrestling where the fans get frustrated and they want to see the other team make a comeback and they get involved and use a lot of that cutting off the ring, a table with three legs can no longer stand deal. And they did it, and then they hurt Kofi Kingston afterwards. And it was so if they can avoid doing comedy skits, if they can avoid being in doctors' uniforms and doing puns about asses, which is what the stuff that happened with Gallows and Anderson, I think that can work. But I don't know whether they'll be allowed to. But I definitely was happy with that. I think that one match is more than the vaudevillains number one were allowed to do, and what was in that gimmick in that vaudevillain gimmick in the first place. So I was really happy with the revival on Monday night.
Yeah, I agree. I'm in the same boat with you. I think they're going to be a good team on the main roster, mainly because this is where I get like very just cynical about it. They're one of Triple H's most prized possessions in the toy box. So by sharing them with Vince, I think they're going to get every opportunity to succeed. And I think the differences you mentioned are going to be the very things that make them entertaining. And as long as that is sold by crowd noise and reaction, I think they're going to be fine. It's funny because I know they've had issues in the past with Dave Meltzer and the issues with Young Bucks and now with Wade and their portrayal of themselves on social media. But I was more amazed, especially in the crowd, watching the reaction of cheers as they destroyed the New Day. And part of it was me with my tongue in cheek, but you know, I also turned to my buddy and was like, I didn't think I'd ever see a lynching in a wrestling ring live. And
there is that element. It was white guys versus the white guys, to quote the old movie Strikes. Yeah. So,
yeah. And it was pretty funny because they hit the shatter machine. And then, you know, I saw that had the conversation with, I think it was Dawson. And then Dawson put up a picture of him and his daughter with t-shirts with Rip ice cream bike on them. And, you know, I thought that was pretty funny because these guys are jerks. And I like the fact that they're jerks and they're not trying to apologize for being jerks. And if even 10% of that gets through, I think that's going to give them a shot.
Yeah, I think that their social media presence, and I enjoy that, is really in support of what Wade is talking about as far as being consistent with your television character, not taking people out of the moment for little reason by showing how nice you are and how you're buddies with somebody and all that. So, and I do know that there's an aspect, I mean, very much an aspect when they're going back and forth with Meltzer, when they're going back and forth with Young Bucks of doing that tongue in cheek, but not so it's breaking out of like what you said, being a jerk. I want to talk about the FU deal. And we're going to do that in just a second.
When you're looking to tune in live to the PW Torch Livecast, find out about the next episode, or just catch up on an episode you missed, go to our new website, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can select shows by specific day, specific host, and format, including a grid of our latest interviews and best of selections on the homepage. That is pwtorchlivecast.com, where you can stream our show live and listen to past shows on demand. That's pwtorchlivecast.com.
Rich, Brian brought up the FU chant at Raw. And again, Wade and I talked about that just briefly. I just want to say, I don't like it. I mean, I went into real detail about my philosophy about that, about fans and what they do at wrestling shows and negative and positive. But just at the end of the day, you got families and kids somewhere. I don't like it. And so what was your just follow up on what Brian asked, I guess.
Well, here's my issue with the whole Monday after Raw, and that ties into the chant. And it, one of my good buddies, Chris, who was kind enough to step in to co-host with me last week or 2 weeks ago, he's been on my case because every year when we talk about WrestleMania, talk about the Raw and how I'm interested in going, and he keeps reminding me, you hate when you're there. Why are you doing this to yourself? And I'm like, it wasn't that bad. And then every Tuesday after WrestleMania, I was like, you're right. Why did I do that? It's horrendous. I have a five-year-old. I made a deal with him when he was seven that we would go to a wrestling event live. And then I negotiated it down to six. I don't think I'm going to be able to take him to an event if this keeps up until he's far older, because I don't know what the jack wagons next to me are going to say just to prove they dislike Roman Reigns or Wrestler X. The FU chant I thought was just way out of line. It's one thing to show disdain or say he's not cast right, or even when Vince came out, fire Roman. But what's funny to me is we talk on here. Wade, you and Wade will talk on the Bruce Mitchell Audio, the longest running podcast in human history. And we'll discuss online wrestling, and everyone will talk about how Vince McMahon is the grand poobah and he's to blame for any of the indecisions. And then when he shows up, everyone sings along to No Chance in Hell and claps for him. And that, to me, is the biggest case of cognitive dissonance I've ever seen in my life. So you cheer Vince, you say F you Roman, you throw 23, I counted, 23 beach balls during the cruiserweight match. And then you do the
I didn't like that at all. You talk about something dickish, as you said. That's exactly what that was. And I, you know, and in a way kind of talked about, well, you know, they did it when they were changing the ropes and everybody had to sit and wait. And I'm like, you know what?
I can tell Wade that right now. It wasn't when they were changing the ropes. It was from the start of the show. And as soon as the first ball got stopped, someone inflated another one and then another one. By the time the cruiserweight match ended, 23 of them had been thrown around and confiscated.
That's worse. Oh, my God. Yeah. And then it was worse
when Jericho owned it and said Beach Ball Mania, because that's what they were chanting after the last one had been confiscated.
Yeah, I went into, like, you know, I'm a guy who went for months in the 80s with months every month for years, count signs and what to do and trying to get on television and all that stuff back in the day. But it's like, yeah, that was way out of line. You're interfering with the show and people who are doing a respectable job of trying to entertain you or trying to give you your money's worth. And you're interfering with other people's value too. I really hate, like, you know, I'm constantly hearing this, wrestling being defended because it's not as bad as people say it is, or it should be left alone, or just that even when people don't say it's fake, it's like, well, here, you know, any kind of injury that someone has, it's, you know, this shows, you know, people say it's fake, but look, it's real, and all this, you know, all this defensiveness is like, when you act like that, that's what people look down on. And when you act like that and you act like that and someone's there with their children because their kids like wrestling and they enjoy it. They didn't come for that. It's like you are living the worst of the wrestling fan stereotype. Not the low IQ, but just the vulgarity and the callousness of this. I'm going to entertain myself by chanting F you when I don't have to, and screw the kid who loves Roman Reigns, or screw the kid who's just here to have a good time, and screw the parents who don't want their kids hearing that. I talked about this on the livecast with Wade. I happened to talk to a group of third graders about wrestling because their teacher asked me to as part of like something they could like do as a behavior incentive. And one of the kids was at WrestleMania, but I'm talking to them. I'm going, okay. And this is what I always ask kids: who's your favorite? And the one who won was Roman Reigns. So imagine you're some kid that's 10, 11 years old, or 9 or 8 years old, and you watch television and you buy into Roman Reigns, whether they should or not, you do. And a lot of kids do. And then you go to this show that you're really excited to see. And not only are these like really loud, scary male adults, you know, yelling this chant, it's F you, Reigns. I mean, that's, come on, you know, have some decency or have a heart. Is what I kind of think. It has nothing to do with Roman Reigns to be the number one guy or anything like that. It's just, you're out in public, you know, act in a decent, respectful manner and, you know, treat people the way you would want your children to be treated. So, anyway.
Yeah. And one thing that stuck out to me with this, and it stuck out the whole weekend, and I had this long diatribe when my voice finally came out with my friends, is this idea that with pro wrestling fans, there's this undercurrent of, you know, we hear a lot, and I've listened to you guys a lot as a Torch subscriber, the idea of, I miss the Attitude Era. I miss this. I miss that. I hate TVPG. For me, the Attitude Era was when I was 14, 15 years old. So up until that point, I had a solid 9-10 years of TVPG teaching me pro wrestling, whether it was on tape for WWF Coliseum home videos, whether it was WCW. When I first saw ECW and I first saw the beginnings of the Attitude Era, as I became an adolescent and then teenager, sure, that was enticing. And I was like, oh my God, I saw, you know, there was this woman who had her boobs out and this is real cool. Oh my God. You don't need to bring that to a 5-year-old. You don't need to bring that to an 8-year-old. Think back to when you were a fan, you didn't get that stuff. And I think and it's like, I feel like an old man at 35, like you're robbing these fans of their wrestling innocence. You're going up to them and saying, well, you know, Superman's Clark Kent, right? And it's just horrible. And then you take the passive aggressiveness of some of these fans. Like, I went to the Hall of Fame. I got sick, so I had to go home early, and I had a headache. I'm in line. I'm waiting to get a water so I could take a aspirin. And there's a fan who wants to get in behind me, but they were closing the thing. And rather than taking it like a normal person, the guy blows up and is like, well, you're not going to effing give me a drink. I'm here. I came all the way to your city for WrestleMania and you're not going to give me a drink. Like, the expectations of fans just because you are a WWE fan is obscene right now. And I think while the product needs improvements, I think as a fan base, folks need to improve, because it's not going to help when you get put on TV and you're saying F you Roman, or you complain about the four guys that were in the main event not getting pushes, and then they're in the main event of Raw and you're doing the wave. Or, like I mentioned earlier, you boo Bill Goldberg, and the first time you as a passive aggressive fan have a wrestler challenge you directly and tell you to shut up, you shut up, because you know he's real and you know he is sick of your crap. And it was well deserved. I applauded him when he did that.
Yeah.
Because he was talking to his family, he was talking about how the stuff, and I get what Wade was saying, as far as you don't say this out loud too much, the sacrifices, but I get it, 3 years old, 50 years old, he's putting his body through hell to look like a third of the guy he was in WCW. And all he's hearing is, you beat Kevin Owens. And fans are complaining that the part-timer has the belt. Well, the part-timer that has the belt now didn't beat Kevin Owens, so he's okay.
Well, the part that makes me laugh out loud, and what I was, and I thought watching WrestleMania too, was that fan, and I hear them all the time, and I talk to some in person. I see them certainly on social media. That, you know, they're like, they're in the locker room not getting paid more because the special attraction is there, and the special attraction is taking a place on the card where they would have gotten paid more. I understand why a wrestler might be frustrated with that, and they have to go out of there every week and get kind of, you know, numbed down by all this television and all this bad television too. But a fan that does that, I just, like, to me, when I watched WrestleMania, I was like, this is the group that's going to turn on Brock Lesnar and Bill Goldberg, particularly Bill Goldberg, if this really is important. And it wasn't. It was. There was the electricity. There was the, there was this. Goldberg was over and Brock Lesnar was over. And yeah, they cheered when Lesnar won the title at WrestleMania in what seemed like an epic, you know, badass bar fight. But they didn't turn on it, and so that's a lot of, to me, it's getting to be more of windbag stuff than anything else. It's not. When push came to shove, that same fan was on their feet as soon as those two came out, in a way that they weren't for anybody else on that show. So, what do I care if it's a part timer? I want to see the best show possible as a fan. Isn't that what fans?
And for me, I would argue, I'm always a person, my wife hates it, and I'm sure you do too, considering, you know, I've been doing it to you with UNC and all that stuff, just in good fun. I'm a devil's advocate fan when it comes to arguments. And when I hear the argument about part-timers, my counter is, don't you think they're making more because the part-timers bringing in eyes that haven't seen them in a while? Isn't the rising tide raising all boats? Shouldn't you consider that to be a thank you and not an F you? You know, isn't that a valid argument? And most people don't want to hear that.
No, I mean, that is what it is. And then at the end of the day, I don't even think it's most people. And I certainly don't think it's like the casual people. I think it's a certain type of fan that's not thinking that's emotionally invested in wrestlers moving up and down the card, but not necessarily emotionally invested in who wins and loses or the storylines. And they want their favorites to succeed. That's great. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, would the show have been more exciting or less exciting without them? It would have been less exciting. Would the match with your favorites have been less exciting or more exciting without those special attractions being on the show? It would have been less exciting. And you have to, you know, you have to look at it. And then what the hell, I'm frustrated with a system that has to have special attractions to have some real excitement, but it's not the special attractions' fault. It's the system's fault. And we talk about that all the time, but yeah, I mean, Goldberg delivered because Goldberg, you can say what you want to about him, but he delivered in eyeballs and money. And, they, you know, as a business, they were happy with it. And fans showed that they were happy with, his participation when he was there for the very most part. And also, there is the when you cross the line with the wrestler, and I've been there and seen it, and I've done it too. And then when they change on you, it's like, all right, you know, you just got your punk card pulled. What are you going to say? And that's, these are human beings too. I definitely remember a friend of mine years ago calling me up and, you know, bragging about heckling a wrestler in a bar. A wrestler didn't deserve a very good reputation, at a major show. And some other wrestlers getting really angry at him. And I was just like, you know what? The guy was bragging to him. And I was like, you know what? There's a God-given right to have a drink after work. And you interfered mm-hmm. with that. It was like, you know, at the end of the day, you know, that was you were out of line, not them. I don't care. Well, the blah, blah is a terrible wrestler. You know, like, you know, yeah, he is. So what? It's like, you know, leave him alone. And that, you know.
Yeah,
that
it's like the Randy Orton picture. You take a picture of someone in a bathroom while he's washing his hands, and you expect them to like it.
Right.
It's a lot of the golden rule type stuff.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I definitely agree. All right, let's move on to some phone calls. Let's go to 718-718. You're up next on the PW Torch Livecast.
Hey, Rich and Bruce. This is Romeo from New York City.
Hey, Romeo.
I went to Orlando. I was there from Thursday to Wednesday. And I wanted to talk about my experience there and also ask you a question about future WrestleManias. I'll start with my thoughts on WrestleMania week. I thought it was a good week. WrestleMania, specifically the show, I thought AJ and Shane was the best match, followed by Goldberg and Brock. I thought the Hardys pop was unlike anything I've experienced in person, considering that was an open roof stadium. I thought that could have been louder mm-hmm. if the roof was closed. And I apologize for my voice. I pretty much lost it over the week. I wanted to talk about my seats. I bought a ticket that did not say limited view on it. And those corner posts mm-hmm. that hold up the top of the ring pretty much blocked my view about half of the ring. So I had to spend most of the show looking at the video board. But I've gotten in touch with WWE support, and sounds like they're going to give me tickets to a pay-per-view in my area. Looks like I'll be going to Extreme Rules or something like that. So if anyone else went to the show and had the same problem, you'll have to show them a picture of your seats or a picture of your ticket, and you could email fanservices@wwecorp.com.
Thanks for seeing
me. Let me ask you something. How do you feel about, Romeo, how do you feel about the way that WWE handled your problem?
I thought they could have let me know that if judging by the seating chart, if they knew that, they could have let me know that it was going to be a limited view. But I thought they handled it perfectly. I'm fine with getting tickets to a future pay-per-view.
All right. Appreciate the call. We're packed up on calls, so I want to hit some of them pretty quickly. So Let's do that. Let's go to, and I bet you thought I wasn't going to let you on the air. Let's go to Darrell from Georgia. Darrell, I don't want to say it, but I guess, congratulations. And just know that I just spent a whole week just getting hammered by all ages. And I had people I worked with years ago out of nowhere texting me, "Hey, Bruce, how's it going?" Monday night and Tuesday morning. So just, just saying. So, and God only knows, and Bryant Williams of the Katie Vickers Alive podcast, and Britt Whitmire, who are both diehard idiot Carolina fans, UNC fans. Bryant Williams won the NCAA bracket, PW Torch bracket contest, and is getting a beautiful PW Torch VIP t-shirt. And so anyway, it's not been a fun week for me.
Do you love Pro Wrestling Torch? Then we've got another show just for you, Ring Rust Radio.
Ring Rust Radio breaks down the hottest topics and news from around the wrestling world, including WWE Raw, SmackDown, and pay-per-views, TNA, Lucha Underground, New Japan, and indie wrestling. Add in interviews with the biggest names in the industry, like Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Paul Heyman, Kurt Angle, and many more. And Ring Rust Radio has something for everyone.
Check out the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Interact with us on Twitter at RingRustRadio and email us at RingRustRadio@yahoo.com.
But anyway, go ahead. And the co-host of this show, who betrays his own family, like, to give the family and I all time. So anyway, not that I'm bitter or anything. Go ahead, Darrell.
How you doing, Bruce? How you doing, Rich? Thank you, Bruce. It's been a long time. I had to wait a whole week to hear you say that. Can't find you nowhere on Twitter or nothing. But thank you.
I beg your pardon. What? Anyway.
Can't find you nowhere.
Good. Oh, man. I took crap from Matt Hardy, of all people, on Twitter, too, about this stuff. Like, oh, come on. So, yeah, I'm sitting in this diner trying to eat my dinner, and the local news is on, WFMY, the CBS station. And, of course, they're just thrilled. Oh, my gosh. Because they're all, they come out of the journalism school, the news bunnies there, and on and on and on. And they go, and local celebrity Matt Hardy tweeted out on, what a time to be alive. The Hardy brothers are WWE tag champions, won it at WrestleMania, and Carolina won the national championship. And so I tweeted that out with an ugh and make it stop. And of course, I hear from Mr. Hardy liking that. So yeah, it never ends. But go ahead, continue.
it is what it is. Proud to tell you so, but hey, second place. Always better. But to the wrestling aspect of everything, I was liking what y'all was saying earlier about fans and how they acted and on Monday Night Raw. But everybody always got to forget that, fans is short for fanatics. And what you're seeing right now is something that fans or people who was in the crowd or shows or sporting events been acting this way for a long time. So this is not something that just randomly happened. It's been happening for a long time. So you probably won't ever see this out of any type of sporting event. That's something that you have to expect.
Yeah, Wade and I talked about some of that too, about other sporting events and where that can happen. But yeah, WWE markets, particularly TNA does too, to children. ECW didn't market to children, and I went to enough ECW shows, and I went to the ECW arena, and they weren't kids there. And there would be a few kids at other shows, but they didn't market it to them, and I questioned the judgment of parents that did that. But I've also, on the other hand, during the Attitude Era, and I've told this story before, taking kids to WWE shows where women were topping out and had to just try to manage that with the kid. And then finally I just gave up. And this is like, I'm a school teacher. This is one of my students who's, and so I wasn't thrilled with that. And Anyway, that mix of, all right, you want to be vulgar, you want to be grown in the way that strip clubs are grown or whatever it is, or concerts are, then don't sell all these toys. Don't sell the ice cream to kids. You know, pick a lane and get in it. And that's where I kind of, I have a problem with it. And that's where one of the reasons why people look down on professional wrestling and their fans. It's common decency. Standing, I will get mad and start cursing about something when there are no kids around. But there's kids like right in front of me. I'm gonna think it and not say it. I mean, that's just. I don't think that makes me any great person either. It's just act right. But I appreciate the call, Darrell. I want to move on and get some more of the people waiting in line. So 615, you're up next on PW Torch Livecast.
Hey, Bruce and Rich, how you doing? I'm outside. Speaking, you're talking about basketball. I'm actually outside shooting basketball. So if I sound a little bit winded, or if you hear some outside noise, I apologize. I'll just get through real quick. Basically, I thought the best match of WrestleMania that I saw, and it's kind of I'm in the minority, but I really liked the match with the Hardys and Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson and Edmund, and I guess Cesaro and Sheamus. I thought, to me, that when you combine the way that the Hardys' reaction was and then with the match itself and the fact that Jeff Hardy did his familiar moves and everything, I thought it was a good match. But what I really want to talk about was obviously the worst match of the night, and that was Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton and all that hocus pocus. It just really got bad. And I want to get your guys' opinion. Do you think that it's over for Bray Wyatt as a character, and do you think it's his chance that it might be salvaged, or is it pretty much over for him? And also, it's funny, we're talking about WWE and audience and all that, and I sent you an email about comparing it to WWE to NASCAR. If you want to talk about it or not, that's fine. Thanks for taking my call, and you have a good rest of the night.
Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I don't know that Bray Wyatt is finished, because I think WWE, as long as fans are holding up the Fireflies, I think WWE is going to stay with him. But is he going to be in this rut that he's in? Maybe. I don't know that. I would have thought that this was all about getting him out of that and really, taking a year to make him into something big and getting him that world title. And then he loses it right off the bat. And the only real innovation is, there's worms crawling all over the mat, and somehow we're supposed to be scared. Rich, what do you say about Ray?
I'm with you on that. And we probably won't have time this week, but I want to talk next week about NXT and the call-ups and stuff, because I had some questions on that. But one of the things I noticed with Bray Wyatt and with one of my favorite wrestlers in independent wrestling, Tommy End, is that they're supposed to be, in the case of Tommy End, he lives his gimmick in terms of he's a guy I've talked with and had conversations with in person and on Twitter about how he views religion and how he reviews the symbols that he has tattooed on his body. And his character as Aleister Black reflects that fairly. I'm scared to death that as soon as he makes the main roster at some point, they're going to make him into the Ooga Booga Scary Crucifix, not a crucifix because we don't want to get Christian groups mad type of person that they made Bray Wyatt. Because the understanding of what Bray Wyatt the character was to what he is now, I'm lost. Like Steve Austin mentions to Wade all the time who Seth Rollins is, I have no clue who Bray Wyatt is.
Yeah, it's pretty incoherent is really what it is. And every time you think they're going to move in a direction to do it, it's not enough to just to do some high concept, graveyard burning. It's got to be, they've got to have something to this. And, Eric Rowan coming back and Luke Harper and why, whatever that is, it's just not thought out enough. And I don't know. And time is running out for that to work. And Randy Orton, just to me, ever since the elbow to the head, there's something strange about how, and I don't even mean strange like he's hurt, but there's something strange about how he's used and how he kind of holds back and how they hold him back as far as, as far as what they ask of them. And yeah, it's not connecting. And I talked with Wade about this. I thought that there for a while, I was like, okay, I see, because I saw the plan. You know, I could see that, you know, the resourceful, clever baby face was going to infiltrate the Wyatt family and pull the rug out from under them. And that's what happened. And so I did what I think a lot of fans do, which is I started filling in all these blanks myself that WB Creative did not fill in, and then kind of reacted to that instead of reacting to what was right in front of my face. And yeah, it's not there. I mean, that's what you can say about it. 720, you're up next on POV Torch Livecast.
Hi, it's Pez in Denver calling again.
Hi, Pez.
So I just wanted to agree with you guys about that Raw after Mania crowd. Kind of toxic, new levels of self-indulgent. And it's like you can't really take them seriously when they're trying to protest the guys that they feel are being pushed without good reason, like Roman Reigns. And then they're completely disrespectful and dismissive during Neville's match. What, is Neville not a good worker? I mean, are you protesting him? I did hats off to Neville, though, for the way that he teased the red arrow and then hopped off the turnbuckle and slapped on the submission. I like that a lot.
Yeah, but hopefully I have to use that all the time, but, you know, selective points going forward because he's a heel. Yeah, I mean, I'm like, yeah, I'm definitely like, yeah, you know, I'm not going to give you the cool superhero. I'm going to give you the mean guy that makes the other guy say uncle.
And I'm totally with you on Bray Wyatt in that regard, too. He should take away the Fireflies. That's the first thing that he ought to do if he actually wants to be a heel. But
yeah, I think problem. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Bruce, just to follow up on last week, you were kind of expressing, and you have expressed before, some skepticism about how Reigns would be received if he did turn heel. Is it fair to say that you have you're suspicious that maybe he would get cheered if he turned heel?
I think that's what the theory is that he would turn heel. He would then be cool because he's a heel, and he would get cheered because he was doing mean things, and then you could turn him back. I think, you know, that's the theory of how to get him over as a babyface. But yeah, I mean, the psychology of, I don't like this guy. I don't like him on my television. He doesn't deserve being pushed down my throat. But if they would push him down my throat as a heel instead of a babyface, they would be listening to me, and I would really love to see that. I don't get that. Now, having said that real quickly, I thought Monday night at the beginning was extraordinary, and I thought that I don't know how it plays out exactly, but I think that, you know, I think Reigns is going to stay a babyface because he's still telling the truth as this alpha male in a way that heels don't. But I just thought, I've seen rejected acts. I've seen rejected baby faces, rejected heels, and rejected top acts. And they don't come out and have that much energy from a crowd for 11 minutes of that. I mean, it was just, that was something. Now, whether that energy can be really turned to be much, much more useful than it is, I don't know. But that was something. And that wasn't, I'm sick of this guy, or I'm tired of this guy, or Hogan sucks, or whatever it was, that, or even, you know, Reigns sucks, or John Cena sucks. That was big. And what he participated in with The Undertaker was big. And that's kind of what I'm dealing with. I don't think that, you know, I don't think it's, you know, we're just completely rejecting him, because if you were completely rejecting him, number one, you wouldn't be there, or number two, you'd be sitting much more apathetic. The rejection is apathy. It's not hate versus love. It's love or hate versus apathy. And so anyway, that's kind of what I thought. I was really fascinated by that. I don't ever want to see it again. But I mean, you know, they stood on their feet. You know, they Richby and part of that crowd stood on their feet for what, 10, 11 minutes.
And it was weird to me, Bruce, because that happened twice in one weekend for me, and it was very eerie because it was two different people in two different environments. Because at Evolve 81, Larry Dallas came out to do an interview, and the exact same thing happened for 8 minutes, where he would put the mic to his mouth, and you could not hear a word because it was deafening, the amount of boos and just noise he was getting to shut up. And then he'd put the mic down, and it would be a mid-level din, and then he'd put it up again, and it would just go super sound. It was insane to see it, and then to see it on Monday, I was like, wow. One, I was very amazed that Larry Dallas got to the, you know, evolve indie fans that much, and two, I don't know if you agree with this, but I don't think Roman putting the palm of your hand thing up was appropriate because you're not having the meat out of the palm of your hand. You don't want that reaction.
Yeah, it was interesting. Yeah, it was interesting. But I thought like the only thing to do, unless we get to, and the other thing I thought between the Monday and Tuesday was, you know, we're going to have the show sometime where guys just walk out and do the, you know, to their entrances, and actually Saturday night too with Bobby Roode. Do guys just walk out, do their entrances, stand there, crowd goes crazy, have a way the crowd goes crazy, and then don't have a match and leave, and that's the show. You know, and just do that several times, and that's the show. We're getting to the point where they might be able to pull that off. I don't know if they should, but I thought that Reigns saying what he said emphatically, but not saying very much, was a smart key thing to do. And I don't know. I don't know where it goes as far as like, is that just the, you know, WWE's excuse, the Bizarro World, or it's like the Bizarro World is their most dedicated fans. I mean, imagine that. I mean, that's so weird in so many ways.
One of the things, and I don't think we'll have the time to talk about it tonight, the biggest takeaway I disliked from WrestleMania was the finish of the Undertaker match, primarily because, and I don't want to go crazy Japanese fanboy, but I really think that was the place for Roman to debut a more devastating finisher than just his 15th Superman punch.
Yeah, there's a point with that. There, you know, like, I think that was like for kids and, you know, and for the casual fan, the Superman punch is it. So let's just get that over again simply, and let's just keep doing it. So, that might have been a better thing. I did like that he did seem to like do a little bit of subtle acting about he was torn about putting down, you know, putting down the Undertaker that he respected. But I don't know. I mean, I thought Undertaker like played it really well. It was Clint Eastwood in Undefeated. It was Clint Eastwood in Gran Torino.
Yeah.
And the
spear. That spear bugged me because at first I blamed Roman because again I thought he could have done another move. But then I thought about it and it saddened me because at that point the Undertaker was so laterally impaired that he couldn't even do the spot where you swing at him as he's bouncing off the ropes to make it look like he's generating the movement as a counter rather than him just being the chugging choo-choo that's building up steam. And
right.
I felt bad for him. Like, you're so tired and you're that hurt that you can't even do the basic move to denote why this guy's generating movement. And you're doing what you can, man. And so I'm kind of grateful that was his retirement.
Played into the even the botched, you know, the botched tombstone power driver spots. The reality of the situation played into the drama, the story they were trying to tell. Even though, you know, I wouldn't say that was a great match, but it was, you know, the ending was very dramatic and very poignant, and then also just poignant in this weird way that the guy, you know, the big star who he was, who was beating him, people at very least had a mixed reaction to that being that guy in the first place. And of course, a very mixed reaction to seeing the legend go down for the last time, but you know, stuff in the ring and all that. And I think Undertaker not announcing it ahead of time made it different, you know, that made it like, oh my gosh, this is it. But, you know, like I'm seeing something happen right before my eyes. That's a bonus and a bonus I don't want and a bonus I do want, you know, all at the same time. So that was interesting. 7:04. Appreciate people holding with us. Up next on PW Torch Livecast, and Rich, we're going to wrap it up pretty soon. 7:04. You're up next.
Hey guys, it's Brian from Charlotte. How you doing?
Hi, Brian.
Excellent.
Hey, two quick questions, and I came in late, so if you've already answered these, I apologize. The superstar shakeup on the week coming up next week, is that a good chance for them to move Rusev and Lana over to SmackDown and rehabilitate them? And also, do you think any of the titles will change brands? And I'll take it off the air so you can talk.
Appreciate the call. I hadn't thought about Rusev and Lana, but and Rusev, I believe, is hurt right now. But yeah, they could use a new environment and just start whatever it is they're going to be now. Just clear the deck and do it. And I don't expect any of the titles to move. Rich?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat because, as you guys mentioned, there's a difficulty with moving those titles now because of the whole color scheme. The only titles that aren't color schemed are the U.S. and Intercontinental. And I don't foresee.
Rich, can I interrupt you for a second? I didn't even think about that for a second. And I even told Wade, like, when they do the purple ropes gimmick for 205 for the cruiserweight, I don't even notice. And I've got my television is fine, and I've had my eye surgery. My eyesight's pretty good, but it's like, who cares? I mean, but you're right. Like that would be difficult in changing the belts and all that. And I hate that. That's so stupid. I mean, I don't know. It's just not. I don't know. It's so brand, you know, being a consistent brand and, you know, anyway, look, just fight, you know, fight for a championship. Screw that. So anyway, I digressed and take it back.
No, that's fine. I think the issue is Owens with the title on Raw. If you bring him over, you're pulling him out of the feud with Jericho that they just intimated that they were going to continue. They're still doing the feud with Ambrose and Corbin. So I would think neither of those guys move. And then obviously the champions, only way I could see the Universal title moving is because Vince wanted to truly finally show that Raw, as most of us know, is his baby. And move the new title to SmackDown and give himself the, you know, the established WWE Heavyweight Championship.
I don't think
the titles are going to move. It's too much work. Like you said, with the brand, it's too much work. If anything, I'm interested in how they're going to have a one brand Money in the Bank situation now.
Yeah. Yeah, that part. And there are ways to work that out. Rich, thanks for holding with us. All the callers, interesting calls, interesting observations. Appreciate everything. And for VIP members, Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, up and running for download all weekend long. And thanks to everybody thanks to everybody for getting the new t-shirts. PW Torch t-shirts are available at pwtorch.com. And also listening in to the roundtables, listening to the livecast after WrestleMania, and what continues to be a lot of news and a lot of things coming out of that. We appreciate our VIP members. We appreciate the livecast listeners. Rich, I will talk to you next Friday, and thanks everybody for listening.
If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post-pay-per-view roundtables with the one-hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to pwtorchvip.com, and that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly, and also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/goVIP. This is love.